It's Thursday, the 24th of July, 2025, and you're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sunsounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer reader and Flagstaff, Chuck Kaufman, bringing you news of interest to our veterans and military community here in Arizona. Today we have news from our military news websites, our veteran service organization websites and publications, as well as the Veterans Administration. Starting out, we have this item from Stripes.com, the website of the Stars and Stripes newspaper. Gaslit and abandoned. Gulf War veterans push to declassify documents on chemical exposure. This is by Linda F. Hershey of Stars and Stripes from the 22nd of July, Washington. A group of veterans and their advocates are pushing the Defense Department to declassify tens of thousands of documents from the first Gulf War with the aim of finding clues to the potential toxic exposures of more than 100,000 troops from the military's demolition of a chemical weapons complex in southern Iraq. But their demands for the release of all classified documents from the Gulf War, which are stored in the National Archives, are reviving a contentious issue over the destruction in 1991 of a major weapons depot in the Kamishaya region that the military found later contained chemical weapons. We believe the remaining classified documents on the first Gulf War may hold information researchers need to find a cure for Gulf War illness or, at the very least, improve treatments. But these documents have never been seen outside the intelligence community, said Ronald Brown, a former Army specialist who served in the Gulf War and is helping to lead the effort. There are more than 1 million classified documents that might contain information on potential health effects to troops from chemical weapons exposure in the first Gulf War, according to Gulf Link, a website created by the Defense Department. But only about 46,000 of those documents have been released. The Government Accountability Office in 2004 published an investigation of the large-scale demolition operation at Kamishaya and questioned the accuracy of the Defense Department's projections about the path of the chemical plume and which troops were affected. Brown and other veterans met in June with the members of the Defense Health Agency in Virginia that manages the military's global health system. They did so after sending a letter to President Donald Trump's administration asking for help. Brown said agency leaders pledged to work with the veterans. My team and I are eager to continue discussions about Kamishaya and potential deployment-related exposures and to describe the Department of Defense's collaborative lines of effort to address past exposures, mitigate future hazards, and protect the health of our forces and veterans, according to a letter to veterans from Tracy Lattimore, Acting Deputy Assistant Undersecretary of Defense for Health Readiness Policy and Oversight. Gulf War illness is a term to describe medically unexplained chronic symptoms experienced by some veterans who served in the Gulf War, according to the Department of Veterans Affairs. Chronic medical problems commonly reported by veterans include fatigue, joint pain, respiratory problems, headaches, and gastrointestinal issues. Brown said the Defense Department previously had stopped responding to the veterans' request for information in 2020 until he and other veterans sent letters in February to Trump and Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth. Many of us veterans developed symptoms while in theater that never went away. My symptoms have worsened over the years, and my medical issues have compounded, said 57-year-old Army veteran Anthony Hardy of Florida, a former staff sergeant who is National Director of Veterans for Common Sense. Just declassify everything pertaining to the war, Hardy said. If the Defense Department has to set limits, it will. Veterans for Common Sense and the Vietnam Veterans of America are advocacy groups working with Brown and other Gulf War veterans to pressure the Defense Department to declassify the documents. Whether declassifying the documents reveals something, that remains to be seen. But it is a matter of justice to Gulf War veterans, said Hardy, who served from 1986 to 1993 with deployments to the Persian Gulf. This is important to a huge cohort of veterans who feel gaslit and abandoned by the DOD. James McCormick, Executive Director of Government Affairs at Vietnam Veterans of America, said his organization stepped in to advocate for the Gulf War veterans as a group because they do not have a major advocacy organization of their own. He said VVA has been providing assistance since 2016 to Gulf War veterans seeking information about chemical weapons releases connected to the destruction of weapons depots in Iraq. This is a role that Vietnam Veterans of America has taken on and invested in through funds, advocacy, and seriously taking to heart the founding principle of VVA. Never again will one generation of veterans abandon another, McCormick said. The veterans and their advocates also are asking for notification letters to be sent to veterans who served in the Kamisaya region about their exposure risks and for the VA to work with the Defense Department to provide medical exams. Representatives from the DOD Office of the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs have been in correspondence with and recently met with representatives from the Vietnam Veterans of America to discuss topics associated with findings on demolitions involving Iraqi chemical weapons at Kamisaya, Iraq, in 1991, the Defense Department said Monday. The DOD is committed to providing up-to-date health risk communications to DOD personnel and veterans. Similarly, the DOD works closely with the Department of Veterans Affairs to coordinate and collaborate as needed to help facilitate veterans' access to all appropriate care and benefits available to them, the Defense Department said in a written statement. The VA said the agency and research organizations continue to evaluate possible causes of Gulf War veterans' chronic multi-symptom illnesses, including chemical and biological weapons. Brown said a large volume of documents from the Gulf War declassified in 1995 indicated the existence of interview transcript with service members after the destruction of the weapons depot at Kamisaya. He said the publicly released documents also showed chemical sampling was done, but the results were redacted. "We'd like to see the interview transcripts and the results from the chemical sampling," Brown said. "We're hoping to find that in the additional documents. There's got to be a paper trail." But Kurt Love of Texas, a 61-year-old disabled Gulf War veteran, said he is doubtful the declassification of additional Gulf War documents will provide more information about toxins released from the destruction of chemical weapons. "The Defense Department continues to stall, and I'm not confident they'll change. Gulf War veterans have been made into the problem child no one wants to deal with," he said. "It's a tactic to shut us up." Brown, 57, said he began to feel sick in March 1991, 15 minutes after the demolition started. "I came home sick and the problems continue," said Brown, who took photos of the mushroom clouds that plumed from the destruction. He continues to have breathing problems and other medical issues that doctors struggle to treat. "This has been going on for 34 years, said Brown, who has a 100% disability rating from the VA connected to environmental exposures in the Gulf War. It took him 13 years to get the VA to acknowledge his illnesses were connected to his Gulf War service, he said. "I had to fight like hell. There were a lot of denials and appeals. There's nothing that will fix my health problems," Brown said. "But this group of veterans struggle to have their problems recognized and their voices heard." That's Gaslit and Abandoned, Gulf War Veterans' Push to Declassify Documents on Chemical Exposure. Our next article is by David Klepper of the Associated Press, reported on Stripes.com. Pentagon tightens rules on getting medical waivers to join the military. Washington. People with congestive heart failure undergoing treatment for schizophrenia or who have a history of paraphilic disorders will no longer be eligible for a medical waiver to serve in the military, according to new rules issued by the Pentagon on Tuesday. The guidance signed by Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth updates a list of conditions that disqualify potential recruits from serving in the armed forces. The decision comes after the Pentagon announced earlier this year that it would ban transgender troops and review other medical conditions that are currently eligible for a waiver. America's warfighters must be physically and mentally capable of performing their duties in the harshest of conditions, Hegseth wrote in the memo announcing the changes. Severe underlying medical conditions introduce significant risks on the battlefield and threaten not only mission priorities, but also the health and safety of the affected individual and their fellow service members. Waivers have long been used to enlist young people who might otherwise be unqualified for military service due to a wide array of medical, conduct, or other reasons. Most waivers are issued for medical conditions ranging from asthma, eyesight problems, or skin disorders to more complex health conditions such as past psychological illness or previous sports injuries that may have healed but still must be evaluated. Prior to the new rules, heart failure, current treatment for schizophrenia, and a history of paraphilic disorders defined as a persistent sexual interest in atypical objects or activities were among a long list of physical and mental health conditions in which waivers were allowed. Multiple sclerosis, a history of cystic fibrosis, past organ transplants, or a suicide attempt within the past 12 months will also be considered disqualifying conditions that make a person ineligible for service. The new rules list several conditions in which a waiver may only be granted by the Secretary of a Military Branch. Those conditions include a missing eye, hand, or foot, past corneal transplants, liver failure, kidney disease, past psychotic disorders, or the presence of an implanted pacemaker or defibrillator. The detailed rules governing which medical conditions qualify for a waiver have come under greater scrutiny amid the Trump administration's ban on transgender troops. New rules required active duty troops as well as National Guard and Reserve troops to identify themselves as transgender and voluntarily leave the service or face involuntary separations. That's Pentagon Titans rules on getting medical waivers to join the military. Our next article is by Corey Dickstein of Stars and Stripes. Legislation introduced to expand benefits for atomic veterans on 80th anniversary of first bomb test from the 16th of July. As the world marks 80 years since the first atomic bomb was detonated in the New Mexico desert, a Nevada congresswoman introduced new legislation Wednesday intended to streamline benefits for those military veterans exposed to radiation while supporting nuclear programs or working on cleanups. Representative Dina Titus, Democrat of Nevada, introduced the Providing Radiation Exposed Service Members Undisputed Medical Eligibility, or PRESUME, Act. Her office announced the bill would force the Department of Veterans Affairs to provide veterans exposed to nuclear radiation in service, known as atomic veterans, with presumptive benefits for toxic radiation without having to provide specific evidence of their exposure, Titus said. Under current policy, the VA requires veterans to provide proof of on-site participation and a radiation dose estimate from the Defense Threat Reduction Agency, which he said were historically unreliable. Titus argues military veterans should receive benefits and compensation for toxic exposure just as their civilian counterparts exposed accidentally to nuclear radiation do under the recently expanded Radiation Exposure Compensation Act, or RECA. Our atomic veterans should be treated in the same way as civilians exposed to atomic radiation, Titus said in a statement. They've been wrongfully subjected to a double standard and have not received the care they deserve for treatment of cancer and pulmonary diseases. The PRESUME Act would fix this. The new legislation was backed by several groups who advocate for atomic veterans, including the National Association of Atomic Veterans. Keith Kiefer, The Nonprofit Association's national commander said Titus's bill was a key step in the right direction to provide critical benefits to those who participated in nuclear activities, especially those who cannot prove their exposure levels. The legacy of nuclear tests is riddled with veterans not having proper personal protective equipment and or failure of monitoring radiation levels, said Kiefer, an Air Force veteran who participated in nuclear debris cleanup in 1978 at Aniwetok Atoll, a string of islands in the Pacific Ocean where the military dropped more than 40 nuclear bombs in tests after World War II. Few of the veterans were issued radiation badges, and of those that had them, there were high failure rates due to environmental factors, requiring a veteran to prove the level of exposure places an unreasonable burden of proof upon them. Kiefer believes he was exposed to radioactive waste as he dug up and repaired damaged underground communications cables. He later learned he was sterile after returning home from Aniwetok and when he and his wife tried to start a family. He was also diagnosed with a thyroid condition after his military service. His health problems continued, and he was diagnosed with degenerative bone disease and a blood clotting disorder that caused embolisms in his lungs. Titus's new legislation comes on Wednesday, which has been recognized since 1983 as National Atomic Veterans Day, an effort spearheaded by then-President Ronald Reagan to represent the sacrifices of troops associated with the U.S. military's nuclear program. From the secret Manhattan Project's July 16, 1945 Trinity test at Alamogordo, New Mexico, until the last test of the Julin nuclear test series at the Nevada test site on September 23, 1992, the United States detonated more than 1,000 nuclear bombs, according to the National Association of Atomic Veterans. Kiefer wrote in an opinion piece this week that Congress has treated veterans exposed to radiation and nuclear tests differently than the thousands exposed during cleanup operations like him. He urged Congress to expand the RCRA to allow cleanup atomic veterans to seek compensation for radiation exposure. Help for cleanup veterans is currently limited to the VA, despite its history of failing atomic veterans, he wrote. RCRA offers fewer benefits than the VA, but is much simpler to navigate, and I've seen firsthand how much it has helped my fellow atomic veterans. He wrote veterans often spend 10 to 14 years petitioning the VA for compensation. The speed with which veterans can get help through RCRA is critical, he wrote. I served in Aniwetok in 1978, nearly 50 years ago. Many of us do not have 10 to 14 years to wait for the VA to approve our claim. Titus said her bill would break through bureaucratic barriers to ensure all atomic veterans can be compensated by the VA. Our country's atomic veterans helped win the peace during the Cold War, and they must be able to access the highest standard of care available, the Congresswoman said. That's legislation introduced to expand benefits for atomic veterans on 80th anniversary of first bomb test. Next from Stripes.com, we have D-Day veteran and TikTok star Papa Jake Larson dies at 102. This is by Angela Charlton of the Associated Press, reported on Stripes.com from the 20th of July, Paris. D-Day veteran Papa Jake Larson, who survived German gunfire on Normandy's bluffs in 1944 and then garnered 1.2 million followers on TikTok late in life by sharing stories to commemorate World War II and his fallen comrades, has died at 102. An animated speaker who charmed strangers young and old with his quick smile and generous hugs, the self-described country boy from Minnesota was cracking jokes till the end, his granddaughter wrote in announcing his death. Tributes to him quickly filled his story time with Papa Jake TikTok account from across the United States, where he'd been living in Lafayette, California. Towns around Normandy, still grateful to Allied forces who helped defeat the occupying Nazis in World War II, paid him homage too. Our beloved Papa Jake has passed away on July 17th at 102 years young. Granddaughter Michaela Larson posted on his social media accounts. He went peacefully. As Papa would say, love you all the mostest, she wrote. Born on December 20th, 1922 in Owatonna, Minnesota, Larson enlisted in the National Guard in 1938, lying about his age since he was only 15 at the time. In 1942, he was sent overseas and stationed in Northern Ireland. He became Operations Sergeant and assembled the planning books for the invasion of Normandy. He was among the nearly 160,000 Allied troops who stormed the Normandy shore on D-Day, June 6, 1944, surviving machine gun fire when he landed on Omaha Beach. He made it unhurt to the bluffs that overlooked the beach, then studded with German gun emplacements that mowed down American soldiers. We are the lucky ones, Larson told the Associated Press at the 81st anniversary of D-Day in June, speaking amid the immaculate rows of graves at the American cemetery overlooking Omaha Beach. We are their family, and we have the responsibility to honor these guys who gave us a chance to be alive. He went on to fight through the Battle of the Bulge, a grueling month-long fight in Belgium and Luxembourg that was one of the defining moments of the war and of Hitler's defeat. His service earned him a Bronze Star and a French Legion of Honor award. In recent years, Larson made repeated trips to Normandy for D-Day commemorations, and at every stop, Papa Jake was greeted by people asking for a selfie. In return, he offered up a big hug to their greatest joy. One memorable encounter came in 2023 when he came across Bill Gladden, a then 99-year-old British veteran who had survived a glider landing on D-Day and a bullet that tore through his ankle. I want to give you a hug. Thank you. I got tears in my eyes. We were meant to meet, Larson told Gladden, as their hands, lined and spotted with age, clasped tightly. Gladden died the following year. In his TikTok posts and interviews, Larson combined humorous anecdotes with somber reminders about the horrors of war. Reflecting to AP on the 3 years he was in Europe, Larson said he is no hero. Speaking in 2024, he also had a message to world leaders. Make peace, not war. He often called himself the luckiest man in the world and expressed awe at all the attention he was getting. I'm just a country boy. Now I'm a star on TikTok, he told AP in 2023. I'm a legend. I didn't plan this. It came about. Small-town museums and groups around Normandy that work to honor D-Day's heroes and fallen shared tributes online to Larson, one of their most loyal visitors. He was an exceptional witness and a bearer of memory, the Overlord Museum posted on Facebook. He came every year to the museum with his smile, his humility, and his tales that touched all generations. His stories will continue to live. Rest in peace, Papa Jake, it read. Thanks for everything. As D-Day veteran and TikTok star, Papa Jake Larson dies at 102. Our next article, still from Stripes.com, is by Matthew Adams. This from the 22nd of July. The Army says 250th anniversary celebration in D.C. cost $30 million. Washington. The Army's parade and festival last month to celebrate the 250th anniversary of the service in the nation's capital cost $30 million, a spokesman said Tuesday. We conducted the parade for a very specific reason, because we saw it as our opportunity to introduce or to continue introducing America's Army to the American people. We wanted Americans to feel connected to their Army, service spokesman Steve Warren told reporters at the Pentagon. For the parade, the Army had about 6,700 troops from every service division, 150 vehicles, and more than 50 aircraft. The cost for the parade and other events was estimated to be between $25 and $45 million, including an estimated $16 million to repair streets and other damage to the city following the event, NBC News reported at the time. The Army took preparations to protect roads, including placing steel plates on the parade route where tanks would have to turn sharply and fitting vehicles with new track pads. The parade caused minimal damage to streets in Washington, Warren said. The service spent $3 million on steel plates. The plates had to be secured with 6-inch spikes into the asphalt that left holes in the ground that the Army refilled. The only additional damage, Warren said, was a curb that was crushed by a tank near the staging area where the vehicles were kept. He did not have a cost for the curb. The only check that I'm aware of that we had to write was to repair that curb, he added. The Army's anniversary celebration, June 14th, was the same day as President Donald Trump's birthday. Estimates showed about 198,000 people passed through metal detectors to attend the events, according to Secret Service data. But because there were separate checkpoints for the festival and the parade, it's not clear if people who attended both were counted twice. Leading up to the event, the Army estimated 200,000 would attend. Though the service does not know how many people decided to join the Army because of the celebration, the service has seen an increase in website traffic and social media performance since the parade, Warren said. While we have no scientific way to back it up, I think instinct tells us that an increase in interest, some of that translated into an increase in joining, he said. And that's Army Says 250th Anniversary Celebration in D.C. cost $30 million. You're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. Remember, you can listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona programming, including Weekly Reveille, on the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org or on the Sun Sounds of Arizona app, available for your iPhone or iPad from the Apple App Store or from the Google Play Store for your Android phone or tablet. And either on the website or the app, you can listen to programming as it streams or select programs to enjoy at a time of your choosing. And the Sun Sounds of Arizona stream is also available on your Amazon Echo or Dot. We're going to turn now to the Military Officers Association of America magazine, Military Officer, and this is the August edition. And they have a column entitled Family Matters, Replace Your ID Card. Plans to replace paper-based legacy ID cards with the new Next Generation Uniformed Services Identification Card, the USID card, were originally announced in 2020. The rollout of the new USID cards came out in phases, but officials are now urging everyone with the older style to upgrade to the newer, more secure ID card. Replacement of all paper-based USID cards with 4 or 5 year expiration dates will occur by December 31, 2025, according to a March 2025 email to MOA from the Defense Manpower Data Center. The center added that the replacement of indefinite, INDEF, expiration date cards, such as those used by retirees and incapacitated dependents, must be completed at the customer's convenience prior to the paper-based card's form's termination in 2026. The DOD has yet to announce a 2026 date for the full conversion, that is when the paper cards will no longer be accepted, but could come as early as January 1, 2026. How to get a new card? If you are enrolled in the Defense Enrollment Eligibility Reporting System, or DEERS, the nearest military ID card issuing office can provide the new version. Many ID card offices operate on an appointment-only basis. I know this for a fact that Luke operates that way. You have to make an appointment to get the card. And the easiest way to find a location and make an appointment is by going to the RAPIDS ID Card Office online website. That's at idco.dmdc.osd.mil/idco/locator. Appointments fill up quickly. If you cannot find an available appointment, you might need to widen your search radius. Many U.S.-based retirees and family members are now eligible to renew their U.S. ID cards online via the RAPIDS or RAPIDS site. The program only works for renewals of active, unexpired cards. Other requirements include sponsor and the cardholder must have email addresses in DEERS and will have had to have authorized DOD to contact them at those addresses. You can check under My Profile on the ID Card Office online website to find this. The cardholder must have a photo on file in DEERS that was taken within the last 12 years. The cardholder must have a mailing address in DEERS, and the cardholder must live in the U.S. So, what if I miss the deadline? Starting in 2026, Legacy USID won't be accepted for access to benefits, privileges, or DOD bases per Military One source. Older styles could be confiscated at an installation's gate. Some MOAA members with in-def legacy cards have expressed concern that they might lose access to medical benefits if they cannot renew their cards. However, Karen Rudisuli, MOA's Director of Government Relations for Health Affairs, confirmed with the Defense Health Agency that if someone does not obtain a new ID card, it does not terminate a beneficiary's record or impact eligibility for TRICARE for Life, and DEERS will reflect TFL, TRICARE for Life, as long as the eligibility criteria are met. This is an article by Lila Quintiliani, and she is MOA's Program Director for Financial and Benefits Education and Counseling. That article, Replace Your ID Card, just as another added incentive, your military ID, your government ID card, will fill the requirement for a real ID when you're boarding an airline. And I have tested that and used my ID card flying from Phoenix to Kansas City, and was accepted at both airports without any problem. If you do have a problem using your military ID as your real ID card, contact the TSA supervisor at the location, and they will confirm the fact that that is a real ID and is suitable for boarding an aircraft. If you do have a problem with your military ID being accepted, you need to talk to the supervisor at the TSA site that you are dealing with, and they will have the right answer. Also, from the August edition of the Military Officer Magazine, we have this item, useful information from the Your Benefits column. Turning 60? Take these steps for a smooth transition to retirement. As National Guard and Reserve members near age 60, they reach important milestones in their military retirement pay and benefits. Whether they've been retired awaiting pay or continue drilling until age 60, this transition requires action, so benefits begin on time. Here are four considerations for reserve component members as they approach their 60th birthday. TRICARE health benefits. At 60 years old, reserve component retirees and their eligible family members can start using TRICARE for health and medical needs, the same version as their retired active duty counterparts. Some reserve component members might have been using TRICARE Reserve Select or Retired Reserve, both of which require premiums. Upon turning 60, retirees become eligible for standard TRICARE plans with much less expensive enrollment fees. Importantly, enrollment fees count toward a family's catastrophic cap, which further reduces overall health care costs. Your location can impact the availability of plans, which might include TRICARE Prime, TRICARE Select, TRICARE Overseas, and the U.S. Family Health Plan. Reserve component retirees must contact TRICARE within 90 days of turning 60, otherwise they'll need to wait until another qualifying life event or an annual open season to enroll. Military retirement pay. Reserve component members might have retired from active drilling status before this point, but age 60 typically marks the beginning of their retirement pay. Some members might be eligible to start earlier if they completed qualifying periods of active duty. However, no member can receive retirement pay before age 50. To qualify for military retirement pay, members must have completed at least 20 good years of service as confirmed by their notice of eligibility. Retirement pay does not begin automatically, so retirees must apply in advance. It's recommended they submit DD Forms 108 and 2656 6 to 9 months before turning 60. Each branch of the reserve component has its own process for submitting retirement pay applications. Survivor Benefit Plan. Depending on the election made when they received their notice of eligibility, retirees might need to make a decision about the military survivor benefit plan. This program provides financial security for a spouse or designated beneficiaries after the retiree's death by continuing a portion of the retirement pay. If a retiree opts out of the plan or selects reduced coverage, spousal consent is required. This ensures both parties are aware of the potential financial impact of not enrolling in full coverage. Retiree ID card. Reserve component retirees should update military identification cards for themselves and their family members. This will provide continued access to base facilities such as commissaries, and it will also indicate TRICARE medical coverage. This article, Turning 60, was written by Kate Harrell. She's a personal financial educator and also a military spouse. Let's go back to Stripes.com for another article by Linda F. Hershey. This one from the 16th of July. New VA program for veterans facing foreclosure clears last hurdle in Congress. Washington. Legislation that creates a safety net for thousands of veterans facing foreclosure with delinquent home mortgages now moves to the president's desk for his signature after passing the Senate. The VA Home Loan Program Reform Act, which was adopted by the Senate with a voice vote late Tuesday, establishes a partial claim program that allows veterans who are behind on home loan payments to receive federal assistance. A companion bill in the House was adopted by voice vote in May. The bill authorizes the VA to purchase a portion of the debt on veterans' loans in default or at imminent risk of default, according to the legislation. The mortgage industry estimates that more than 20,000 current borrowers are considered seriously delinquent, and a partial claim program at the VA could help them retain their homes, lawmakers said. The goal is to help veterans catch up on payments and prevent foreclosure, they said. First, the bill authorizes the VA to pay the owner of a loan guaranteed by the VA an amount necessary to avoid the foreclosure of the loan, provided that the holder of the loan and the veteran obligated on the loan execute documents to ensure the VA obtains a secured interest in the property covered by the loan, according to the bill. Leaders from the House and Senate Veterans Affairs Committees released a joint statement after the Senate passed the bill. This bipartisan and bicameral legislation will assist veterans who are facing financial hardships and provide VA with a tool to better help veterans stay in their homes and avoid foreclosure. The VA Home Loan Program provides one of the best benefits VA has to offer and has helped veterans and their families build home equity since its inception in 1944, according to the joint statement. The VA Home Loan Program was created under the Servicemen's Readjustment Act, which became known as the GI Bill. More than 3.7 million veterans hold active home loans guaranteed by the VA, according to the agency. Senator Jerry Moran, Republican of Kansas, chairman of the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, and Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat of Connecticut, the committee's top Democrat, offered the formal remarks after Senate adoption. On the House side, Representative Mike Bost, Republican of Illinois, Chairman of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs, and Representative Mark Takano of California, the top Democrat on the committee, included their names on the statement. This legislation will ensure these veterans have a viable solution to avoid defaulting on their loans, bring their mortgages current, and avoid foreclosure by establishing a replacement partial claims program, the lawmakers said. The partial claims program replaces the Veterans Affairs Servicing Program, which is described as a last resort option for delinquent borrowers to lower their mortgage rate and make their monthly payments more affordable. Under that program, the VA bought the mortgage from the servicer. But the program permanently closed May the 1st after Republican lawmakers complained the VA should not be in the business of buying home mortgages. They argued some veterans might intentionally fall behind on their payments to get a lower mortgage rate from the VA. My focus is to ensure that veterans remain in their homes whenever possible, said Representative Derek Van Orden, Republican of Wisconsin. But I am concerned that this program could evolve into a financial burden of billions of dollars in bailouts that fall on the shoulders of taxpayers. Van Orden introduced the VA Home Loan Program Reform Act in the House for a partial claim program to allow veterans to catch up with their overdue mortgage payments while keeping the original loan. Under the partial claim program, veterans facing financial hardship can defer missed payments without immediately facing foreclosure, Van Orden said. The VA Home Loan Program Reform Act received support from lenders and other stakeholders, including the Mortgage Bankers Association, the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, and the American Legion. We encourage the VA and mortgage servicers to continue their collaboration as this program is implemented, ensuring that they help mitigate any impact on veterans facing financial hardship while VA takes the necessary steps to establish new partial claims program properly, lawmakers said in the joint statement. That's new VA program for veterans facing foreclosure clears last hurdle in Congress. We're going to turn now to the Southern Arizona VA Healthcare System newsletter, and we have this item from their local news. Virtual Veteran Engagement Veteran Town Hall. This is being put on by the Southern Arizona VA Healthcare System. And they state, join us for a virtual veteran engagement event where veterans, their families, and caregivers will receive updates on healthcare operations and learn more about VA healthcare services offered to veterans. And you can register for this veteran engagement event. And they have a QR code on their newsletter. But if you don't have access to that newsletter, the information is it will be Wednesday, August the 6th, from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. They state, join us virtually on Wednesday, August 6th at 1 p.m. for the Southern Arizona VA Healthcare System 4th Quarter Veteran Engagement Event, where veterans, their families, and caregivers will receive updates on healthcare operations from the healthcare system leadership and also learn more about the VA healthcare services offered to veterans in Southern Arizona. This is your chance to connect, share feedback, and stay informed about the latest updates and resources available for veterans and their families and caregivers. Now, they have links to register for the event on the newsletter, but if you don't have access to the newsletter, before the event, you can send an email to pao.savahcs@va.gov with any questions you have, and you can request, I believe, a link through that email. Their next item, Tucson Business Community comes together to support veterans through food drive. 7 years ago, the Arizona Transportation Builders Association, the ATB, in Tucson, Arizona, started a donation drive to support veterans. On Wednesday, 9th of July, the ATB donated a large quantity of clothing items, food, and hygiene products to the Tucson VA's Patriot Pantry and Homeless Veterans Program. Spearheaded by the association's executive director, Lisa Higgins, the initiative has grown significantly over the years with the help of the organization's membership and local business leaders. The next item, how to refill medications. Their medications are not automatically sent. You must order your refills. The refills are sent through the U.S. Postal Service after you order them. Since the medications come by mail, please order your medications at least 8 days before you run out of medicine. You may order earlier and the refill will be sent before you run out. Review all your medications at each provider visit to make sure the medications are renewed, since prescriptions may expire or run out of refills. Unfortunately, they're unable to refill the prescriptions at the outpatient pharmacy window. You need to check your medicine regularly and order early. Don't go to the emergency department for routine refill requests. The emergency department will not refill your prescriptions. There are multiple ways to order your refills or make renewal requests. You can order using MyHealthyVet, and that's myhealth.va.gov. You just log in and select pharmacy and then refill prescriptions. You can order using the new RX refill app. You download the prescription refill app from the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store, log in or register, and then select refill VA prescriptions. And finally, you can order by telephone. Toll free for Arizona, you call 1-800-470-8262 and choose option 1 for pharmacy. Then you follow the automated prompts to request your refill or renewal. Have the following information available: your social security number and prescription number. The prescription number is in the upper left-hand corner of the medicine bottle. Enter the numbers only, not the letters. Then they have community events. Celebrate 130 years of Exchange Stores serving America's Armed Forces. DM Exchange birthday event will be July 25th from 10 to 1400. This is a main store event. For all veterans that have access to Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, you are invited to celebrate 130 years of Exchange Stores serving our armed forces on Friday, July 25th, starting at 10 a.m. at the Davis-Monthan Air Force Base Main Exchange, located at 4505 Granite Street, Suite 2527, Tucson, Arizona 85708. There'll be a free cake cutting ceremony, veteran resource fair, and hire a veteran job fair at the event. To learn more about how veterans and caregivers can access military installations, visit the DoD Installation Access Simplified, 3 updates for veterans and caregivers. Now, did you know that certain veterans are eligible for exchange services and commissary privilege? To learn more, visit the Commissary and Exchange Privileges for Veterans on va.gov, Commissary Shopping Eligibility on commissaries.com, and Veterans Online Shopping Benefit on Military One Sources, that's Military One Sources, one word, .mil. And that is information from the Southern Arizona Veterans Health Update newsletter. We also have a newsletter from the Phoenix VA Healthcare System, Veterans News Now, and we have a couple of items from that: the Virtual Health Resource Center Roadshow. The Phoenix VA HCS Roadshow will be on the 29th of July from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. This is at Sholo Community-Based Outpatient Clinic, and that's 5171 Cub Lake Road in Sholo, Arizona. Veterans, family members, and caregivers can speak with virtual care experts to determine which virtual care options might be right for health and lifestyle needs. Let us show you how virtual services enhance your access to VA care. And so their statement is, join us at the Sholo CBOC on Tuesday, July 29th, to learn about virtual care. Veterans, family members, and caregivers can speak with virtual care experts to determine which virtual care options might be right for health and lifestyle needs. You will learn how to access high-quality VA care virtually without having to step foot in a VA clinic. The VHRC experts are available to help you get started with, first, demonstrate using and downloading VA mobile apps, set up VA loaned devices, VVC test calls and troubleshooting, prepare vets for VVC appointments, create secure sign-in accounts for VA.gov and MyHealthEVet, demonstrate how to use and navigate VA.gov and MyHealthEVet, demonstrate how to use VetText, V-E-T-E-X-T, for online scheduling, refills, and appointment check-ins, Annie for Veterans, improving and managing healthcare goals. And that Annie for Veterans is an app you can download for your phone. And of course, much, much more. And that's an announcement from the Phoenix VA Healthcare System newsletter, Veterans News Now. In the time we have remaining, I'd like to go to news.va.gov for several items from the Veterans Administration. In the first article, veterans finish strong at the 2025 National Veterans Wheelchair Games. This is from the 23rd of July by Ronaldo Leal, Public Affairs Specialist from the VA Digital Media Engagement. The 44th National Veterans Wheelchair Games came to a close in Minneapolis after 6 days of competition, connection, and camaraderie. Co-presented by VA and Paralyzed Veterans of America, the Wheelchair Games brought together 537 veteran athletes from across the country to compete in over 20 adaptive sports events, including basketball, softball, rugby, cycling, archery, disc golf, pickleball, nine ball, boccia, and powerlifting and swimming. Since its launch in 1981, the Wheelchair Games have grown from a small event with 77 athletes and 7 competitions into the world's largest annual wheelchair sports and rehabilitation event solely for veterans with disabilities. The Wheelchair Games are open to veterans with spinal cord injuries, amputations, multiple sclerosis, or other central neurological conditions who require a wheelchair for athletic competition. Each year, veterans from different generations, from World War II to post-9/11 service members, come together for this celebration of sport, courage, and camaraderie. The mission of the Wheelchair Games is about more than medals. The event promotes whole health, rehabilitation, and recovery through adaptive sports, helping veterans rediscover purpose, gain confidence, and build lifelong connections. For Navy veteran Brianna Warham, attending her first Wheelchair Games was life-changing. "I never thought I'd be able to play sports that required this kind of movement again," she said. "Then I came to Wheelchair Games, and I was like, oh my God, this is incredible." That sense of discovery is what drives veterans like Marine Corps veteran Julie Kasai to stay involved. "After my first time competing, I committed to going to every National Veterans Wheelchair Games for the rest of my life," she said. For Army veteran Linda Hooker, who competed in adaptive fitness, slalom, bowling, boccia, and frisbee golf, "The spirit of the Wheelchair Games is unlike anything else. I love the camaraderie and spirit of the Wheelchair Games. There's nothing like it," she said. "It's nice to have the Wheelchair Games here in my backyard. It feels like my whole team is here to cheer me on." That sense of family and tradition also keeps seasoned competitors like Army veteran Roy Wilkins coming back. This year marked his 18th Wheelchair Games. "The excitement leading up to the Wheelchair Games gets me smiling every time," Wilkins said. "When I reconnect with my brothers here, it's like I never left." The final days included memorable events like a 700-pound deadlift in powerlifting by Army veteran Anthony Martinez, inspiring finishes in swimming, and the motor rally at the Mill City Museum, where veterans tested their knowledge of Minneapolis landmarks. They have a photograph here of this gentleman lifting at just impossible weight. It has to be seen to be believed. The Wheelchair Games concluded with a closing ceremony where the torch for the 2026 National Veterans Wheelchair Games was officially passed to the Detroit VA Medical Healthcare System. The next Wheelchair Games will take place in Detroit, Michigan from July 9th through the 14th, 2026. From first-time competitors to lifelong athletes, the National Veterans Wheelchair Games continues to demonstrate the power of adaptive sports to improve health outcomes, uplift spirits, return dignity, and transform the lives of our veterans. The images from this year's Wheelchair Games are available on the VA's Flickr album and the PVA's Flickr album. And that's Veterans Finish Strong at the 2025 National Veterans Wheelchair Games. We have time for one more item from news.va.gov. From nursing homes to homes, VA pilot program brings veterans out of nursing facilities. This is from the 23rd of July by Sarah M. Tolstika, Public Affairs Officer from the Martinsburg VA Medical Center. Thanks to a VA pilot program called Nursing Home to Health, NHTH, 61 veterans who get their care from VA have been able to move out of nursing facilities and back to their own homes or a community-based setting. NHTH is designed for veterans with chronic health conditions who don't need the level of care that a nursing home provides. The program prioritizes what matters most to each veteran and focuses on promoting independence, enhancing quality of life, and reducing the need for institutional care by providing care coordination and appropriate referrals to resources. I am so thankful I am able to be home. I still have so much I want to do, said one veteran who moved from a VA-paid long-term care facility back to his own home with his wife of 67 years. Improvements. In some cases, thanks to NHTH, veterans who spend years in a nursing home without a discharge plan were able to return home or to a lesser level of care. Veterans enrolled in NHTH show improvements in both physical and emotional well-being, which in turn results in an overall improvement in their quality of life. And that's all the time that we have for From Nursing Homes to Homes from news.va.gov. You've been listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. Remember, you can listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona programming on sunsounds.org, the Sun Sounds of Arizona website, or on the Sun Sounds of Arizona app, available for your iPad or iPhone from the Apple App Store, or for your Android phone or tablet from the Google Play Store. And you can always listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona programming streaming on your Amazon Dot or Echo.